Om Mangalam Gurudevaya Devi Matriksha Mangalam Mangalam Bhakta Brindebhyo Sarva Lokaya Mangalam Om Stapakaya Chadarmasya Sarva Dharma Sarupine Avatara Varishtaya Ram Krishnaya Mangalam Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ram Krishnam Jagat Gurum Parapadme Tayostritva Pranamami Murmuham I am out today, a very auspicious day during a very auspicious month, this month of Kartik. There's one story where Ganesha was, Skanda or Kartikeya was a little jealous that Ganesha gets all the attention, right? That happens between brothers. Sibling, thank you. That's a very different sibling rivalry. And so Ganesh gave him a boon that the most important month of the year will be, the most auspicious month will be named after him. So this Kartik Mas is very auspicious. And there's two systems of how you calculate a month, whether or not the month is from Amavasya to Amavasya or from Purnima to Purnima. And that is two communities in India, the Smarta Shaivite tradition and the Vaishnava tradition hold differently. Either we're in the second half of Kartik or the first half of Kartik. It depends how you figure. But so there are certain holidays that come during this, in our view, the second half of Kartik, right? But and this is one of them. No matter which way you analyze it, it falls during this auspicious month. So yesterday it started with this very auspicious day called. Skanda Shasti, right, the sixth day. So this is a day when Lord Kartikeya, when Skanda, he killed the demon Tarakasura, very auspicious. And we're coming on next Saturday is Kartik Purnima. This is considered the birthday or Jayanti of Kartikeya, so very auspicious. And today is another auspicious day called Jagadatri Puja. So we have a photograph of a deity above Sri Ramakrishna's picture at Ma's feet, Jagadatri. A very beautiful form, like Durga. She rides a lion, and she's very golden like Durga. But you know something different? What's different compared to the other Durgas? She has four arms. Or Yuli Durga has six arms, eight arms. Eight arms or ten arms, right? So this is a forearm form, like Makali's forearm form. And so in Bengal, she's only worshipped in Bengal. The name Jagadatri is a universal name for the goddess, but this puja is observed only in Bengal. And in Bengal, during the season, this is the main Shakti worship season with Navaratri and Durga Puja. Then after Durga Puja, we had Shyamakali Puja, right, on Diwali, and now Jagadatri Puja. So those three goddesses, these three forms of the goddesses are very important. So Durga Puja is seen as a Devi in her Rajasic nature. She's the one who kills demons and fights, and she's that Shakti behind everything. We pray for her. We need Rajas. We need some Shakti. We need energy to fight and to move on, you know. And so she's that Rajasic aspect of the Devi. And then Kali, of course, Kali is universal. All these forms are universal, but in this, as Triguna avatar, that she's considered Tamasic, Shama. She's dark, Kali, black. Right, so she's and her consort is Shiva. He's the Lord of Destruction, so he's Tamaguna. She's and the Devi in the Tamasic aspect. So we have Rajasic and we have Tamasic. We're missing Sattvic, right? So that same Devi, Ma Durga, Ma Kali, in a Sattvic form, that is Jagadatri, right? That's so you see, looking like Kali with four arms and riding a lion like Durga, but she's golden. She's not black. And she only has four, so it's a unique form, Jagadatri. And Jagadatri means she who holds everything, right? She's the holder of the universe, the holder of the world, Jagat. Jagat also means of anything on the moving. The world comes, the word for the world, and the word for universe means everything that's moving, Jagat, awake. So she's that's holding everything, the whole world, the whole universe, holding all living things, all awake things, right? And so that's also a quality of sattva. Sattva sustains. So she's that power of sustenance. And so she was worshipped in ancient times by Actually, these big puja, Shyamakali puja, Durga puja, Jagratri puja, they were done only by rich landlords because it's very expensive to do these pujas. Her puja can also last 3, 4 days, either 1 day or 3 days or 4 days, like Durga puja, right? Very expensive. And so slowly, her worship became forgotten. Durga puja became predominant in Bengal. That's everybody knows Durga puja and Kali puja. And it even began to be left out of almanacs. It wasn't even listed in calendars anymore. Right? Some people knew. They knew that on the Saptami of Kartik Mash, that is a Jagratri Puja, but her worship became forgotten. And I may get the story slightly wrong. Please forgive me. Holy Mother, please forgive me. But it's very much connected to Holy Mother and Ramakrishna, Sri Ramakrishna. Holy Mother's mother, during this Kali Puja season, went and some offerings were made, but she had a dream that Ma didn't want, that Kali wasn't going to eat the food that she made. She made rice. I may be mistaking the story, but I hope not too badly. It's some version like this that she made rice, but then offered it to Kali, and Kali didn't eat it. Of course, we offer rice to Ma. We think Ma eats. We don't know, but she felt strongly Ma didn't take the food. So she was crying and weeping, right? And then so in a dream, this form Jagadatri came. He says, "No, I want to eat your rice, not in this Kali form, in this form of Jagadatri. You should worship. You should begin my worship in your home." And so already she was an old woman, right? So she started this worship of Jagadatri in her village home in Drambati. And once again, they were not rich. They were not Drambati, and Drambati. They were not rich people, so it's not very difficult to perform such worship. You have to have an image made. You have to have special pots. You have to, a huge amount of food has to be cooked. The priest has to be hired. Just like so many saris have to be bought. Garlands, flowers, sweets, jalebi, everything has to be done, right? And so she would work the whole year preparing, saving, collecting saris and cloth and chanmalas and all the things necessary for puja, and then have the puja done with great faith, and organize and oversee the worship and the food offerings and the cooking. And so when she passed away, right, it was thought, now this was a direct command of the goddess to her, right? So the family wasn't planning to continue. But then Holy Mother had a dream, right, that she should also continue, right? There's many versions of this, these stories, but this is one I remember. So Holy Mother continued this family tradition. But because Holy Mother, as we know, is a little bit has become a little bit famous, right? And so everybody knew, bit by bit, in the Ramakrishna tradition, that Jagadatri Puja was celebrated by Holy Mother, right? So slowly, people thought, "Oh yeah, what is this? We should also celebrate Jagadatri Puja." And all the Ramakrishna missions in Bengal, they celebrate Durga Puja, Kali Puja, Jagadatri Puja. So it began to spread. So now, actually, if you look up Jagadatri Puja on Google, you'll see thousands of pictures. Also, many pujas being done in Calcutta today for Jagadatri. Same thing, a murti is made out of Ganga mud, same way. She's worshipped and then taken to the river and immersed, just like the other forms. And so she's back on the calendars. Right? She's been put onto the almanacs, Jagadatri Puja. So it's also interesting that this is a form that's very, is his the goddess in a very sattvic nature, right? And so we also see in our tradition, we understand Holy Mother to be, Sharada Devi to be also that supreme goddess incarnate or manifested, but not in the normal, not, you don't see Holy Mother in black form sticking out her tongue, holding various weapons to destroy demons, right? Although she did this a few times, we know some stories, right? You really see her dressed in white, right? Very peaceful, very Shantarupa, right? And so the devotees feel she's Jagadatri also. She worshipped Jagadatri, but also she's Jagadatri. And the Divine Mother telling her mother, I want to eat your rice, is very significant also. Maybe that goddess being born in her family to take her food like this. And we also have many stories of devotees, firsthand accounts of devotees who saw her literally in this form of Jagadatri. Swami Chaitananda Maharaj, he interviewed, I remember when I was, he told me the story when I was 17, it really hit me. I mean, I visualized this so many years. Then an old monk he knew, he used to interview and take notes and collect information about disciples of Holy Mother while they were still living, when he was a young monk. Right, so he met so many. This out of that now a huge book, 1,000-page book is coming on Holy Mother, right? It will come in probably next year or the year after, from all that research, independent research he's done. But this one story I remember, when Swamiji met him, he was an old sadhu, already elderly, maybe in Benares or something, I think. And Swami asked him, "Can you tell me what Holy Mother was like? Tell me some story that nobody's heard of Holy Mother." Right? He says, "Well, when I was a young brahmachari, it was my job. I was one of her attendants, and my job is to put medicated oil on her feet. She had very bad arthritis and very gnarled feet. And so her job was to put some medicated oils, the doctor's prescription, on her legs and feet." And so he says, "My son, you know, my feet are hurting. You please give me some massage," right? So she was putting oil. And he was thinking, imagine he's a young brahmachari, he's in his young 20s, you know. He's thinking, seeing these shriveled and gnarled, knotted feet. You have to think, Holy Mother never wore shoes her whole life, right? And now arthritic and so much rheumatism like that. So, and he was thinking, they call her, people say that she's the goddess herself, right? But he says, look at her, trying to think, you know, we think of the goddess, this beautiful form with golden skin, radiating suns and moons shining from her body like this, right? He sees this an old woman with gnarled feet. And just then he saw in the place two golden feet in its place, right? And he looked up and he saw Jagadatri, this form, with four arms, golden form, and he fainted. And he was brought back and some sprinkled water from his waking up. And again, the old lady, Holy Mother, sitting there, saying, "My son, my feet hurt. Please continue." Mm-hmm. So again, he continues. So he told that story to Swamiji. Many stories like that are there. I think you told me that story, Ram Priyadas, of that one of the Holy Mother's cooks or something, on the side of the road, like held her and demanded, "You show me who you really are," and she revealed her form as Jagadatri, right? And then told him, "Don't tell anybody about this vision until after I leave my body." Right? So after Holy Mother passed, and he retold the story of how he kind of held onto her feet and wouldn't let her go, and, "Show me who you really are. I won't let you go until you show me." And she revealed this form of Jagadatri also. And then in that story, I remember, then she asked, "Well, Jagadatri, you don't see here, is attended by Jaya and Vijaya, her attendants. So if you're Jagadatri, who's Jaya and Vijaya?" Right? And so these were her actual attendants, Yoginma and Golapma, I think, right? Golapma and Yoginma. Right? You'll see these disciples of Sri Ramakrishna that ended up taking care of Holy Mother almost her entire life. She says, "Jaya and Vijaya have been born as these two attendants." So anyway, the very auspicious day. And tomorrow, today is Saptami, tomorrow is Ashtami. So on Ashtami of Kartik Mash, this Ashtami is also considered the Jayanti of Bhairav. Bhairav Jayanti, of course, the form underneath Maha is also called Mahakal Bhairav. But this form of Bhairav we have under the tree, riding on a dog, right? This black form of Shiva. He's Shiva, he's an incarnation of Shiva's wrath and anger. Right, and there's many stories on how when Sati gave up her body, he said that Shiva in his anger broke one of his dreadlocks and threw it on the ground, and from that sprang this Bhairava, and he went and he's the one that chopped off the head of Daksha, right? Very dramatically told in the final episode of season one. Quite wonderfully shown, right? That scene is very powerful. But then after that form was created, Shiva, it says that any Shiva temple or any Devi temple, that Bhairava is the protector, called Chetrapal. He's the protector. That's why he's in, actually, if you've noticed, actually his placement by Vastu is not perfect. He's supposed to face south. There's certain rules like that. But we put him just there, because he's looking at the back door, so that's a good thing. He's watching the door. But he's positioned where you can exactly see Ma. Right? If you look eye to eye, the Ma can see through the window and see Bhairav outside. So it's very, we've designed it this way, you know. And so he's the police officer. He protects and controls protects it in the temples, and it also protects the devotees. Those who worship Ma, we worship Shiva, Bhairav is always behind you protecting. There's one story in the when Shiva, let me get this right, when Shiva, Brahma and was being a little bit egotistical, thinking that he's so powerful, because he has, look, Shiva only has one head, right? He had five heads. Right. And Vishnu only has one head. And he has five, you know, thinking there's some story like that, that he was thinking a little bit egotistically. And some form in that he insulted Shiva's power. And so Shiva didn't do anything, but his anger manifested as Bhairava, who immediately cut off one of Brahma's heads. So as a result, our Brahma only has four heads now, not five heads. Right. But there's a sin of called Brahmahitya, sin of killing a Brahmana. Not just a Brahman. Brahma. He cut off Brahma's head, not a Brahman's head, the original head, right? And so it said that that head stuck to his hands. And he went to shake it, and that, because the sin of that form of Shiva, the skull of Brahma stuck to his hands and wouldn't go. And so he began to wander. Anywhere he went, he couldn't get rid of this bowl, right? It became a skull. And then he'd go and beg his food. Wander, not knowing what to do, he'd go and beg his food. And every time somebody put food in it, the food would disappear. Mm-hmm. Right. And so this is one form. It's bhiksha. What's it called? There's one form of Shiva. It's like bhiksha rupa or something. The form of a beggar, where Bhairava's wandering with a skull like that and trying to collect food. But finally, Lakshmi became very sorry for him. Right, and so she cooked food with her own hands, and she put food into his, and that didn't disappear, right? And so he was able to eat it. And then wandering like that, he got to Banaras, and he took bath in Banaras, and the cup separated from him, his hand. So it says that bathing in the Ganga in Banaras destroys even this, the sin of killing, not a Brahman, but a sin of killing Brahma, right? The creator of countless Brahmins. So that's why many Bhairava temples, but in Banaras he's considered the main deity. Of course, the main Shiva there is Vishwanath, but just as important, this is called Bhairava temple. Our Bhairava comes from that temple made in Banaras. Very auspicious. So that's tomorrow, and most important moment of that is midnight, right? Midnight on Ashtami tomorrow night. So if you're up at midnight, you can think of this protective deity, Lord Shiva. So we've been reading very much more briefly than we have during Navaratri. We've been reading from the Chandi, and mostly going through the main hymns, right? And so we're on the fourth hymn of the third hymn of the Chandi, called the Apirajita Stuti. Apirajita Stuti. And in the first story, Lord same Brahma from Vishnu's navel comes Brahma. Brahma from Brahma's ears. From Vishnu's ears come two demons, and they attack Brahma. And Brahma, and there's a beautiful, we've told that story, but they have to awaken Vishnu, and Brahma chants this beautiful hymn called Brahma Stuti. Twam Swaha, Twam Swaha, Twam Hi. Beautiful mantras, very deep. And so Vishnu awakens, fights, and kills these two demons. These are considered. Who are they? It's not Shumbanishum. Shumbanishum? No. Madhukaitava. Madhukaitava. They say they came from the dirt of Vishnu's ears. And Vishnu's asleep. So it's like, it's very, just the residue, bugs that come from the residue of sleeping consciousness. They're not that big. That's why the story is only took a few verses to tell. Right? But then, as creation starts and the gods are established and humans are established and the demons are established, there comes a little bit, some demon, we told his story very elaborately last week, some demon comes up, and that is Mahishasura, the buffalo demon, right? And we told his past and how his parents, his father fell in love with a buffalo and like this. So he represents a very crude, animalistic qualities, right? We all have something, I mean, cosmically and an actual demon, but also internally, right? So this is when, like, very unrefined, raw lust, anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, envy, those things take over. And it says that he defeated the demons, he defeated humans, defeated the gods, and sat on Indra's throne. Indra is a controller, right? So he sits in the position of the ego. right? So it means that some low quality, some gross quality, takes over everything, right? And we see it, that verse started when Mahisha was lord of, when Indra was lord of the gods and Mahisha lord of the demons. There was a battle that lasted 100 years, means a whole life, and at which case Mahisha sat on Indra's throne. He became Indra, right? And so we mentioned last week that this can happen many times a day sometimes. Something takes over your personality and for like that. So what happened? All the gods, not knowing what to do, they prayed to, they went to Vishnu, they went to Shiva. We do also, when we suffer, we come to God and Lord help us. And then something happened. From Vishnu and Shiva's forehead came a light. And from their own bodies came a light and created this Mahadevi, who immediately very quickly, we told that story, very quickly killed that demon, Mahisha. Right. So the realization was is that they went to pray to God, but something from within them came, their own Shakti manifested and killed Mahishasura. And then they chanted this beautiful hymn called the Shakrari Stuti, right? And the end of which, Ma appears and says, ask a boon. And they say, if a boon needs to be given, already everything's been accomplished, you've killed this demon. But if there's a boon, whenever we're in distress, if we remember you, if we recite these hymns, if anybody remembers you, you immediately come and save them and end their trouble. And she goes, Tadastu, may it be. Right, that's her boon. Her boon is that anybody who recites these hymns, which means remembers her with the import of the hymn, the meaning of the hymns, right, that immediately problems will go away. Our problems go away. So that's a real. So now we're starting the fifth chapter. It picks up at that moment. There's an opening mantra chant. Om Asya Sri Uttara Charitasya Rudra Rishihi Mahasaraswati Devata Anushnup Chandaha Bhima Shaktihi Brahmari Bijam Suryas Tattvam Samavir Sarupa Mahasaraswati Prityarte Uttara Charitra Pate Viniyogaha. The demon brothers Shumba and Nishumba, due to the force of their pride and strength, robbed the husband of Sachi, means Indra, of his sovereignty over the three worlds and his portion of the sacrifice. So another demon has come up. This time, two brothers, Shumba and Nishumba. So Shumba, the yogis have analyzed, the grammarians as well as yogis have analyzed these words very carefully. So Shumba means this like conceit and ego, the self-importance, right? So that's a common thing. So the first demon was like when some low temporary emotion or some low drive just takes over in a gross way, like lust or anger, we lose our self-control and give way to uncontrolled something, right? That's represented by Mahishasura. But now there's something more fundamental, more subtle, there's ego, right? The sense of ego, not a sense of self, but the sense of false self, like, oh, I'm very important, right? This is Shumba. And Nishumba, so we can imagine, you have to hear the word Shumba. Shumba means ego, Ni means not, denies, like, right? So what Nishumba means? The opposite of ego. So if ego in this sense means this great sense of pride, what is Nishumba then? Right? Sense of emptiness, of lack, if one of them is exaggerated self-image, the other one is self-loathing. Right? You can so Shumba and Nishumba in these stories always, these brothers, Shumba is the main brother, but it says Nishumba is just like him. Right? They're so close, they're like the same person. Right. And you see, these two are very close. They are the same person, right? Ego comes from this. When Abbot George told, in front of a big front is a big back, right? They're connected, right? That you see, whenever we act in a very egotistical way, we analyze probably there's some lack behind it, some emptiness that we're trying to fill naturally. So now these two demons, Shumba and Nishumba. So it could be conceit and ego or self-loathing and attachment. These two go together. Due to the force of their pride and strength, robbed the husband of Sachi of his sovereignty over the three worlds and his portion of the sacrifice. He also took control away from Surya, Chandra, Kubera, Yama, and Varuna. They likewise took control away from Vayu and Agni. Deprived of their authority, all the gods were defeated, denied their duties, and expelled by these two demons. The gods remembered that invincible goddess. So same thing. Now they've lost their position again. Somebody else is sitting on Indra's seat, right? This time it's Shumba and Ishumba. But so they immediately remembered. Now this time they remembered the invincible God is here, Apirajita. That's where we get the hymn, Apirajita Stuti. The invincible, the one that inconceivable, invincible God is. They thought, now they're remembering, she granted us a boon. Right? When and she said, we're remembering her words, whenever in difficulty, if you remember me, that very moment I will come and end all your troubles. Thinking thus, the gods went to the Himalayas, the king of mountains. He began to praise a goddess, the elusive power of Maya, of Vishnu. So this is very important. This time they didn't go, oh, Vishnu, help me. Oh, Shiva, help me. Because last time they did that, Vishnu and Shiva's help was realizing their own Shakti. Right? The Shakti of all of them is the one who they called. And so if one remembers her, which is what does that mean? Remembers that it's her Shakti behind everything. Right, that itself ends all trouble. That itself will end the reign of Shumba and Nishumba. Right, if you remember that all-pervading goddess. Right. So this is very beautiful. Let's see if I get these opening mantras I haven't chanted in a while. Let's put the light on them. The god said, Namo Devye Mahadevye. So for certain, they go into the Himalayas, retreat, and they begin to pray to that inconceivable, invincible goddess. So that means they go into meditation, they go into sadhana, remembering her and praising her. Right. Namo Devye Mahadevye Shivaye Satatam Namaha Namapakritye Bhadraye Niyata Pranata Smatam. We bow to that divine goddess, Namo Devye, that great goddess. We bow always to you who are the primordial cause of sustaining power. With attention we have saluted you. Rudraye namo nityaye ghorye dhatre namo namaha Joshnaye chandrarupinye shukaye satatam namaha. You are fearsome, we bow to you. You are the eternal golden mother Durga, the support of the world. Dhatre, jagadhatri, support of the universe, we bow to you again and again. You are the moon, you are moonlight, you are happiness itself. We bow to you again and again. Kalyanye pranatas vridye Siddhye kurmo namo namaha Narityaye bhutritam lakshme sarva sharvanye tinamo namaha. You are welfare, prosperity, and perfection and success. We bow to you again and again. O consort of Shiva, the good and misfortune of kings, we bow to you again and again. One thing you're hearing again and again is the term namo namaha, again and again. This means when we get to this point and we have to return to her, to remember her, we do it again and again, the mantra again and again, slowly bringing the mind back. And she's the good fortune and misfortune of kings, which is them, they're the kings of the worlds, right, of the universe, the gods. Their misfortune's also her, their good fortune, their luck is also her, their suffering's also her. Realizing that is the meditation. Durgaye, Durga Paraye, Saraye, Sarvakarinye, Katyaye, Tathaiva Krishnaye, Dhumraye, Sritam Namaha. O Durga, you take us across our difficulties. You are the essence, the author of everything. You are discrimination and black like a storm cloud and the color of smoke. We bow to you. Ati Somyati Rudraye, Nata. Stasye namo namaha, namo jagat pratistaye devye kritye namo namaha. You are at once most gentle and most terrible. We bow to you again and again. We bow to you, O support of the world. O mother, O goddess mother, who exists as volition, we bow to you again and again. Then starts this beautiful litany, a refrain. Ya devi, Sarva Bhuteshu. The first few is a little different. Vishnu Mayati Shabdita. Right. Oh Yadevi. Yadevi means that goddess. Right? Which god, so the one we're supposed to worship in times of difficulty? Which that goddess? Which goddess is that? Is it Ma Kali? Is it Ma Durga? Is it Radha? Is it Mary? Is it Isis? Which goddess are we supposed to worship? Right? Vishnu Mayati Sabdita, that Sarva, no, Sarva Bhuteshu. The one who, Sarva Bhuteshu, that's the one who is in every being. Right? The goddess who exists in everything. And Bhuteshu means in beings, so in people and animals and plants like that. And Bhut also means elements. Right, and the very elements, like in earth, fire, water, air, ether, akasha, the one exists, that being, that goddess, that exists in everything and in everyone, or as everything and as everyone. Vishnu's own Maya, she's the power of Maya. We bow to you, we bow to Namastasye, 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 Namo Namaha. We bow to you, we bow to you, we bow to you again and again. Yadavi Sarva Bhuteshu Chetane Chetanet Yabhi Dhyate. That goddess exists in all beings, who is known as Chaitanya, consciousness. Right, that's a very important, this is ultimate Lurid. That's who's known, who exists everywhere. How do we find her? As consciousness. Right? So consciousness, what is conscious? Consciousness is just that substrata of awareness. So, but usually we catch what we're conscious of, not a consciousness, right? But she's in everything and at everything as consciousness, awareness itself. Then starts, we can all chant it together. We'll chant the only one word, we all know this hymn, only one word changes each time. Yadivi sarva bhuteshu buddhi rupena samstita namastasye 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 namo namaha. Yadivi sarva bhuteshu nidra rupena samstita namastasye 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 namo namaha. Yadivi sarva bhuteshu kshudha rupena samstita namastasyoi 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu chaya rupena samstita namastasyoi 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu shakti rupena samstita namastasyoi 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu trishna rupena samstita namastasyoi 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu Kshanti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu jati rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu lajja rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu shanti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu shraddha rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu kanti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu lakshmi rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu vritti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu smriti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu daya rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu tushti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu matri rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Yadevi sarva bhuteshu bhranti rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. There's a few more verses which we'll get to, but that's a gist of the hymn, and it has the same form. Yadavi Sarvabhu, that goddess that exists in all beings, Shakti Rupena, Chaya Rupena, Kshura Rupena, Nidra Rupena, Buddhi Rupena, in the form of Samstita, always established, completely established, Samstitaha. Right? So I remember my Guruji used to tell me, Actually, this is what happens. As many years pass, you selectively remember what your guru says, right? And pretty soon, I remember this happened because we have our own tendency and our own inclination, so I remember it a certain way. And then many years ago, many years after he expired, I met one of his disciples, an old man, one of his oldest disciples, named Bomla Dada. Very colorful. You got to meet Bomla Dada, a wonderful character. And Bomla Dada, he completely dismissed what I was thinking about everything. And he just pounded, just quoting Guruji's words, because he lived with Guruji so many years, right? And I told, and when he said, and when he was saying, like, oh, I totally forgot that. There's a beautiful example that we forget. Yes, it's, but anyway, so we got reminded. And what he, and Guruji told many, many times, but I hadn't thought of it in many years. His example was, just like his God, we all have different names for God. Guruji's favorite, my Guruji's favorite name for God was that unseen power. I'm going, great, great, the unseen power. Right? Behind everything, there's an unseen power. Right? Yogis can see it, but it's everybody can feel that there's some unseen power. That was his like philosophical way of trying to get our mind. He says, you see, in this, just like in this light, electricity, is we don't see electricity, but we see what electricity manifests as. So that electric current here is manifest as light. Right, and in a fan, it's manifest as breeze, and in the cooler, in the air conditioner or in the refrigerator, it's manifested as cold. And a heater, my electric heater in my kutir, it's manifested as heat. Right, and in a stereo, it's manifested as music. Right, that one power which nobody can see. How do we know it's there? How do we know there's electricity in this current in this light? Well, see, there's a symptom of it. There's a symptom of this electricity, that light or heat. Or coldness. He says, so similarly, everything we see manifested, right? Any manifestation is a symptom of that unseen power, right? He says, that is, and he goes, you know, thou art that, and he starts screaming, thou art that at you, that you're that power, and that God, and that's you. What is that unseen power? It's consciousness. We don't see, the problem is that we're conscious, we don't see consciousness, but we can see the symptoms of consciousness. What's the difference between a live body and a dead body? They're symptoms of life, right? So similarly, they're symptoms of consciousness. So if this list is all symptoms of consciousness. Hunger, sleep, peace, contentment, modesty, right? Faith, auspiciousness, mental activity, vritti, rupena, right? Something rupa. These are all manifestations of consciousness, symptoms of consciousness. It's like light and heat and cool and all. And breeze, right? So this is that, they're remembering that unseen power that's manifest everywhere, but can be seen, can be noticed through its symptoms. The symptoms, manifestations of anything living, conscious, moving, right? Existing, right? Right? Let's see the list here. And actually we could write a book, and many books have been written about each one of these, right? So we're not going to go into it. You can think. Buddhi rupena, in the form of intelligence. Nidra rupena, in the form of sleep. Kshudha rupena, in the form of hunger. Chaya rupena, in the form of appearance. Shakti rupena, of energy and strength. Trishna, the form of thirst. Kshanti, the form of forgiveness. Jati, in the form of existence. Laja, in the form of humility or modesty. Shanti rupa, in the form of peace. Shraddha, in the form of faith. Kanti, in the form of humility also. Lakshmi, in the form of auspiciousness. Vritti, in the form of activity, mental activity. Smriti, in the form of remembrance, memory. Daya means compassion in the form of daya, and tushti in the form of satisfactions, contentment. Matri in the form of mother, this feeling of mother is also her. So then this last one on this list is also interesting, bhranti. What does bhranti mean?
Confusion,
right? That she's also confusion is also proof of her. Right, so it's like we have to remember her, who's the proof of everything, every good, any experience, anything, any manifestation of consciousness is only her. Problem we don't see is her, and we get lost. We see it as her, Then she immediately destroys all difficulty. So she says, maybe not as easy, but it's easy, but it's not easy. Even the gods lost control, Tushumba and Nishumba, right? We should not be too embarrassed. We lose control to Shumba and Nishumba. When even the gods, even Indra and Varuna and Yama, the god of death, and like this, they also lose, right? These are subtle things. But the solution has been given in these verses. Indriyanam adishtatri bhutanam chakadeshuvya bhuteshu satam tasye vyaptadevi namo namaha. That goddess, that mother, who presides over all the senses, who abides in all beings, and who pervades all things. Right? So it's the one who presides over the senses, which is us. We're the ones who preside over the senses. Right? Our consciousness, our awareness, our personality. So she's us, the one who abides in all beings. In the form of who abides in all beings in you. So it's in. So this is what you have to think. The one who, we bow to, that one who is in me, right, and who abides in all beings, which is you, and who abides in all things. That pretty much all categories: me, you, and everything. Right, the one who abides in me, you, and everything. Namastasye, namastasye. We bow to you again and again. I clearly remember. It's cut. Let me look one verse. In the Avarhuta Gita of Dattatreya, my favorite verse, Sam Yogasya Chavi Viyogascha Vartate Na Chate Name Natvam Naham Jagana Nedham Sarvam Atmaeva Kevalam. It says, for us, for you and me, right? He said, this is the Guru Dattatreya, the Avarhuta. He says, there is not union and there's not separation. These things don't make sense, right? There's not union. We really, our problem is union and separation. We're looking for union and we're avoiding and lamenting separation. But he says, neither I, not naham, me and you and jagannath nidham, and this whole world exists. I don't exist, you don't exist, this world doesn't exist. It says, sarvam, everywhere, in everything, atma eva, only the atman, right? Only the self, kevalam, exists and nothing else. Right? It's a nice thing to say, right? The Avarhuta Gita is not an easy hymn to understand, right? I don't know how many, 100-something verses in Avarhuta Gita, can only kind of put my mind around 3 or 4. Right, this is one that because it's so poetic and I want to experience it, so this is one of my favorites. For us, there is neither union nor separation, neither I nor you nor this world exists. The self alone abides everywhere in all things. There's only one. So this is, that's a very Vedantic, and not even Vedantic, completely non-dualistic way of saying it. But that's not our experience. To say that you don't exist and I don't exist, this world doesn't exist. Well, that's a simple answer. Right. This is a classic example. Yeah, you know, it's like I'm suffering. You're not suffering because you don't exist. The world doesn't exist, and I don't exist. Only the self exists. That's not a satisfying answer. It may be a state of realization, but it's not a satisfying answer. This is a step towards that. Rather than saying that you don't exist and the world doesn't exist and I don't exist, saying the only one that exists as me. Exists as you and exists as everything. That's a better, rather than saying it doesn't exist, saying it exists. So my Guruji also used another term that I often forget because it's not my inclination, this line of thinking, but very important. He says that sometimes we, like in Vedanta, sometimes we say, oh, this world doesn't exist, only I exist, aham brahmasmi. There's some, Sri Ramakrishna said that's a little bit dangerous. When you say aham and you mean your ego and your body, and you skip one meal and your consciousness is, and you're upset, and you know, it's like to say I am Brahman is a dangerous thing, because the I, when we say I, we don't mean Brahman, we mean me and my inflated version of myself, subtle version of myself, spiritual version of myself, right? So that's not Brahman. But this is what the Bhagavatam says, and the Chandi also says, is not that I am Brahman. Brahman is me. Brahman has become everything. So in Guruji's language, he says that unseen power is plain as the individual soul. Right? It's hiding, it's plain, unseen as everybody, as you. So the one, it's not that I'm the one has become everything, including me. Right? The one sees through my eyes, but it also sees through your eyes. Right? So it's like, so it's a very devotional approach to non-dualism. The one being exists everywhere, and it's the only being that exists. Right, including the one acting as us also. The one acting as you. The one who's acting as a problem, as a solution to the problem. The one being exists everywhere. Divine Mother, O Divine Mother, you preside over the senses. You abide, who abides in all beings and pervades all things. We bow to you again and again. Chittirupenaya krishnat meta vyapta sita jagat. Namastasye, 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 namo namaha. O Divine Mother, you pervade the world and abide here in the form of consciousness. We bow to you, we bow to you, we bow to you, and again and again. She's not far, she's right here, right? And as close as your next thought. Actually, not even as your next thought, she is your thoughts. She's the one aware of your thoughts, your awareness. But there's a trick. Somehow or another, in the way this whole thing is composed, we forget. As she becomes everything, she becomes everything. We cannot assume why she becomes everything, right? But the yogis talk like this. My Guruji talk like that. She, in sport, the one decides to manifest as many. In order to do that, she loses herself a little bit, right? That's our problem, right? But there's some joy in finding herself again. So she's never separated, right? And these verses, as we go along next week, to find me the last time, our final Narayani Namostute verses, Narayani Suti, we'll talk next week probably. You see how it all comes together, right? That she reveals herself as everything, but also shows how to understand that. Let me find the last verse here. So, what happens? Then they say, in ancient times, this part I don't have it in Sanskrit, I forgot to put it. In ancient times, the gods led by Indra daily sang these prayers. O Ishwari, O source of all goodness, please bring us auspiciousness and end our suffering. We gods again worship you, being tormented by these arrogant demons. Being thus invoked by us, with devotion, please destroy this very moment all of our suffering. Jai Ma, Jai Ma. So I'm sorry I didn't translate, I don't have the Sanskrit. This verse is very, when I first was discovered, it was very emotional. He says, in ancient times, the gods worshipped you with these hymns, right? But what happened, so many things in ancient times happened that we forgot, right? And as we forget, and not just ancient, sometimes ancient times means yesterday. Sometimes ancient times means last week or last year. Sometimes it means last life or thousands of years ago. Right? Gita, Krishna also says to Arjuna, he says that long ago we taught this knowledge, but it was forgotten. So again I speak it to you. Again and again we speak it again. So it says, in ancient times the gods daily remembered you with these hymns. What are these hymns? You are everything. You are everything and everyone. You're the power behind everything, right? That realization, but somehow or another it was lost, and Shumba Nishumba came up, right? Because if you think, what could be more fully satisfying to be in contemplation, in reverential contemplation and experience of the one being that's everywhere and everything and everyone? There's no emptiness that. If we lose it, we forget that, then some emptiness comes. And in order to cover that emptiness, some ego comes to fight for it, right? So Shumba and Nishumba begin to build up, gain strength. And so again, but this time we remember, again us gods are reciting. So again us devotees and devas are reciting the same hymn. Destroy this very moment our suffering. So just to finish it, the narrative, we won't get a chance to read it next week. I want to just a few paragraphs of what happens, right? Dear King, while the gods were thus worshipping, Parvati came there to bathe in the water of the Ganga. So as they're going Yadevi, Sarvabhutashu, or trying to remember her who's everywhere and everything and everyone, and just then goddess Parvati comes and just sits there and she takes a bath and sits down on the mountain, right? And Parvati, we've talked many times, Parvati, Parvat means mountain, right? Parvati, daughter of the mountain. So she's, this is, yogis have said, this is a reference also to Kundalini. What's Kundalini? In our elements, in our Bhuta, right, there's some power behind, it sustains everything, the base of our very existence. But Kundalini is not just in our base, in the base of every element, in the base of everything. The Shakti behind everything is Kundalini. Parvati. Dear King, while the gods were thus worshipping, Parvati came there to bathe in the water of the Ganga. That lovely-eyed lady asked the gods, who is being worshipped here? Right, we're all sitting there going, Yadevi, and then she asked, some lady sits down and says, who's being worshipped? Right, and then an auspicious form emerged from her physical body and gave the answer. So Parvati asks, who's being worshipped here? And then from within Parvati, another form comes and answers. Right. These prayers adore me, she says. Right. So it's like she's within, she think we ask, when we're chanting this, we can also ask, who's being worshipped? That goddess, but who is that goddess? But there is a response. We within, there will be a response that these prayers adore me, sung by the gods after being reduced to nothing by the demon brothers, Shumba and Nishumba. Because Ambika, the Divine Mother, came out of the form of Parvati, she is glorified by the name Kaushiki. Having thus come out, Parvati became dark, known by the name Kali, and sat down in the Himalayas. Right, so her couple names first. She's Parvati and she's Kaushiki. Parvati is a mountain, and Kaushiki means, Kosha means sheath or body. Right, like a sword, it's a kosha, right, or a sheath. But also our body is considered a kosha, a covering. And she who comes out of the covering, right, so who comes out, so it's another symptom of, another epithet of Kundalini, she who comes out of the body, right? But also, I mean, if we saw, I mean, this is a stick, right, but we know within the stick is Ma. If we saw it, she would come, I mean, she'd reveal herself. We wouldn't see the stick, we'd see consciousness, we see Shakti. In everything, right? Same Narasimha story. The Hiranyakashipu, where is this Vishnu? He's everywhere, Father. Right? Well, is he in this pillar? Yes, he's in this pillar. I just showed you the pillar, and he goes and slams his fist in the pillar. But then he realized, oh my God, he's in the pillar. Right? And that realization ripped him apart, right? And that's in Narasimha, right? That same thing. So she comes out in a dramatic way as Kaushiki. And then she sits down and becomes dark as Kali. Right, first time we find this Kali name in the Chandi. At that time, the demons, Chanda and Munda, servants of Shumba and Nishumba, saw Ambika, who had a supremely beautiful form. So, two new forms, Shumba and Nishumba. Right? Shumba and Nishumba revealed in the Siddhi Kunjika Stotram as representing anger and lust and anger. Lust is just desire, and anger is always. Chanda is lust, and munda is anger. Anger is always frustrated desire. When our desires are frustrated, we get angry. It's always the same. In Gita, Krishna says the same thing. So these are two servants, these are two emotions. They went and told their lord, the demon Shumba, which represents that ego, O beloved king, there is a certain woman of supreme beauty, sitting brilliantly in the Himalayas. Such beauty has never before been seen. You should find out who is that lady and take possession of her. So this is a symptom of that ego, demon ego. Right, they see that divinity, and they say, I shall own it. I shall possess it. Oh Lord, amongst demons, among women, she is a gem and exquisitely beautiful, with extremely beautiful limbs. She illuminates the quarters with her lusters. She is there, O Lord of the demons. You should see her, O Lord. The greatest jewels, stones, elephant, horses, etc., are already in your home. The gem of elephants, Arivata, has been stolen from Indra. So has the sacred Parijata tree and the horse Uchaschaira vas. Here in your courtyard, you have become, you have this beautiful chariot bedecked with gems and pulled by swans, stolen from Brahma. You possess the treasure Mahapadma, which was taken by the god, taken from the god of wealth. You possess the unfailing lotus garland stolen from the ocean. The gold showering umbrella of Varuna stands here in your home, as does the excellent chariot that belonged to Prajapati. You have stolen the Shakti weapon of Yama. The god of the ocean's noose is now owned by your brother. Your brother Nishumba has every kind of gem produced by the sea. So it goes on like this. So it says, look how many powerful, wonderful things you have. But each one of them he stole. They're not his. This is the nature of the ego. It takes credit for something that's not his. That's the problem, right? Upon hearing this, the demon's Chanda and Munda's words, the demon Shumba sent the great demon Sugriva as a messenger to the goddess. Sugriva is has been interpreted as false friend, right? The name, right? So he sends somebody. You go and you act in my behalf. You go convince her to marry me. You go and you give my message, my love message to her. Right. Listen, goddess, the messenger said. Oh, Devi, listen, goddess. The Lord of Shumba, the Lord of the demons, now controls the three worlds. I have been sent by him to you with a message. Listen to the words of he whose order the gods cannot disobey and who has defeated all the enemies of the demons. Now he speaks in Shumba's words. The three worlds are, this is the ego speaking. The three worlds are mine and all the gods are my slaves. You can close the door. It's in Jayamati. I now enjoy their share of the sacrificial offerings. I possess the greatest gems of the three worlds and have stolen the best of elephants and the vehicle of the king of the gods. The gods themselves offered me with reverence the best of horses that came from the churning of the milk ocean. O lovely lady, whatever rare objects that existed among the gods, Gandharvas and Nagas, are now with me. We see that you, O Devi, are a jewel amongst womankind. As such, you should also come to me, since I am the supreme enjoyer. That's his great sin. I am the supreme enjoyer. Right? And there's so many. I mean, during Navaratri, we would speak many days over trying to unpack this, but there's so many ways this can be interpreted. Right? Yogis see, actually, that we worship the Divine Mother. We're not trying to force her and take her energy. That's also an ego to, that's claim. Any power you claim is to claim her as your own rather than worshiping her, right? That's one simple thing. But also subtly, we also do puja sometimes, right? It says, now you, I control everything, and therefore with mantras and pujas, I control you too. There's also a way of thinking, a particular material way of egotistically thinking. Sometimes worship is not done worshipfully. Worship is not done selflessly. Right? It's done with motive to control. Right? That's another. There's many layers of that, but we never really just went into that. As I am the supreme enjoyer, you should come to me or to my powerful younger brother Nishumba. That's a very strange line. I am the supreme enjoyer. You should come to me or to my younger brother Nishumba, because the ego is really being propped up only to fill the void of that lack, right? Right. Oh, unsteady-eyed lady, for you are in truth a jewel. You may marry me. If you marry me, you will get wealth beyond compare. Think it over and become my wife. Hearing this, the adorable and auspicious Durga, by whom this universe is supported, Jagadatri, became serene and spoke. You have spoken the truth. You have said nothing untrue in this matter. Shumba is indeed the lord of the three worlds, along with his brother Nishumba. But how can a vow be broken? Listen to a vow I made out of foolishness. He that conquers me in battle, thus removing my pride, shall become my husband. Let the great demon Shumba and Nishumba come here, defeating me. He will have my hand in marriage. Why delay? Go. The messenger said, O Devi, you are being haughty. Do not speak this before me. Who is there in the three worlds that can stand before Shumba and Nishumba? None of the gods can stand face to face with even the other demons in battle. What to speak of you, a mere woman? If Indra and the other gods cannot stand up in battle against Shumbha and the other demons, how will you, a woman, face them? Listen to my advice. Go willingly to Shumbha. Do not lose your dignity by being taken to them, dragged by your hair. The goddess spoke. It is true that Shumbha is strong and Nishumbha heroic. But what can I do after taking my ill-conceived vow long ago? Go to the Lord of Demons and tell him all I have said. He can do whatever he thinks proper. That ends on good. There's two paragraphs of some commentary that you wrote. I want to make sure I didn't forget anything, the main points of this chapter. After the struggle with their lower animalistic tendencies represented by Mahishasura in the previous story, the gods become complacent and unwittedly allow more refined enemies, the demon Shumbha and Nishumbha, to once again usurp their sovereignty. Shumbha represents conceit and his brother Nishumbha represents self-loathing. Conceit and self-loathing always go together, as real self-esteem is always the result of devotion and humility. In the previous episode, the gods prayed to Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva for help, but remembering how spiritual power emanated from their own bodies, forming the great goddess, they now retreat to the lofty peak of the Himalayas and invoke their own Shakti, their spiritual power, by chanting the Apirajita Stuti, the hymn of the invincible goddess, also known as the Tantroktam Devi Stuti, the tantric praise of the goddess. Oh, here's Guruji's example. As electricity manifests in heat in a heater, cold in the cooler, and light in the lamp, so that universal consciousness manifests in all beings as intelligence, sleep, hunger, energy, etc. Recognizing consciousness as divinity is the goal of meditation and of worship. The goddess first appears as Parvati, the daughter of the Himalayas. Parvati represents the power of consciousness known as Kundalini within the body, here represented by the Himalayan mountain. Kundalini exists in most people in a latent form at the base of the spine, just below the Muladhara chakra. As this chakra is predominated by the earth element, consciousness is trapped in matter. From Parvati, goddess Kaushika appears. Kaushika means she who comes out of sheath. This refers to the awakened Kundalini, who, when liberated from attachment to the body and material world, rises energetically up the spine, leading to progressively more enlightened states of consciousness. It is this awakening consciousness that destroys the subtle demons that are encountered along the spiritual path. In this story, when the demons see the awesome power and beauty of the Divine Mother, their first response is to try to possess her. This is the nature of the demons. Thus, the nature of the demons is to steal what they want by force and try to enjoy through possession. The Divine Mother can never be controlled by these methods, and is akin to attempted rape. She reveals herself to those who approach her with purity, service, surrender, and devotion. Thus ends the fifth chapter entitled The Conversation of the Goddess with the Messenger, found in the Devi Mahatmya of the Markandeya Purana, spoken when Sivarani was Manu. So next week, we'll briefly tell 6 or 7 chapters, just mostly just battle between all kinds of demons. So it won't take very long. We won't read those chapters. We'll just summarize the story and then read the final beautiful hymn, the Narayani Stuti, that we get the Sarva Mangala Mangalye Shive Sarvata Sarike verse from. Very beautiful. It's a beautiful closure of this time. Thank you for your kind attention. Jai Jagadambe, Jai Jagadatri Puja Ki Jai.